The drive to go further and reach higher. The same thing that inspires you inspires us. At Strayer University, we're always searching for new ways to make education more affordable. That's why we offer access to up to 10 no-cost gen ed courses to help you save time and money so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. No-cost gen eds provided by Strayer University affiliates of Fuel Learning. Eligibility rules apply. Connect with us for details. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.
This is Michael Brenner, co-author of The Content Formula, Calculate the ROI of Content Marketing and Never Waste Money Again. And you're listening to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast, helping you keep up with the smartest thinking in the quickly changing field of modern marketing. And now, here's your host, Douglas Burdett.
Hello, thanks for joining me on the Marketing Book Podcast. My goal for this podcast is to help you discover new ideas about what's working in modern marketing. Don't worry about taking notes. You can find links to everything discussed in the show notes at marketingbookpodcast.com. Today, we're joined by Michael Brenner, and we're going to talk about the new book he has co-authored with Liz Bedore called The Content Formula, Calculate the ROI of Content Marketing and Never Waste Money Again. Michael Brenner is the founder and CEO of Marketing Insider Group. Michael's also the head of strategy for the leading content marketing platform, NewsCred. Previously, he held marketing leadership positions at SAP as VP of Global Marketing and Content Strategy and head of digital marketing for SAP Americas. He was the president and co-founder of the leading social news site Business to Community and also created SAP's award-winning business innovation thought leadership blog site. He's also a contributor to leading publications such as Forbes, The Economist, and The Guardian. Michael's a frequent speaker at industry events covering topics like marketing strategy, social business, content marketing, digital marketing, social media, and personal branding. Michael, congratulations on The Content Formula and welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Thanks so much. I'm really excited to talk to you today.
Well, I've been a fan for years, and most listeners, I think, are going to know you from your website, B2B Marketing Insider. And that's recently changed to Marketing Insider Group. Can you explain what the change that happened there?
Yeah. So basically, I went from just sharing my thoughts and opinions on marketing in general, you know, largely focused on the B2B market, and more recently focusing, you know, exclusively almost on content marketing, and you know, basically started getting requests from people to help them out in building their own digital strategies, content marketing strategies. And so as of October 1st of this year, I'm officially part-time at NewsCred. So I'm maintaining my title as head of strategy, but also spending the other 50% or it feels like two full-time jobs now, but basically pursuing my dream of building a content marketing consultancy and helping brands achieve hopefully best practice success with content marketing.
You know, I have to admit that when I read your bio just now, I started wondering, wait a minute. You know, normally most authors are busy people, but this guy, I don't know, maybe there's like two of you.
I wish. <Yeah. laughs> I really wish there was. It's you know what? I feel really fortunate and in life in general. I've got, you know, four beautiful kids and a very successful and supportive wife. And, I feel like after probably a long part of my career struggling, like I wasn't sure if I was in the right place, I really feel like I've hit my stride. And, you know, I just can't imagine not being busy. And it's, I don't think about it, but it's, it's a real passion for me. I think, you know, and I say this all the time when I do speeches and stuff and I talk to CMOs, you know, I talk about how the world has really changed in such a short period of time. And I feel like we're still going through that learning curve of change that takes place when, you know, any technology disrupts anything. But, you know, nothing I don't think has disrupted marketing more than digital, social, mobile trends over the last 15 years. And it's just, it's amazing to me how many businesses are still sort of stuck in the past and holding on to the things that just don't work anymore. So I feel like it's my life mission to help them. and I won't sleep and I won't stop until I've helped every single person that I can.
Well, you're definitely a man on a mission, and it is an exciting time. And my favorite expression in marketing is I have to wonder if at times you feel like Copernicus 500 years ago trying to explain to people that the Earth actually rotates around the sun instead of the other way around. Yeah. On to the book. I just wanted to read two excerpts from the foreword, which was written by Joe Polizzi, head of the Content Marketing Institute. And I should mention that you wrote the foreword to his book, Epic Content Marketing.
That's right.
So when you're the host of the Marketing Book Podcast, you have to know these things. Just putting that out there. I want everybody to know. Okay, here we go. According to Content Marketing Institute and Marketing Profs research, approximately 9 in 10 companies employ some form of content marketing. Wow, that's great. The problem? That same research says that just 30% of organizations are successful at it. And even worse, more than half of those marketers have no idea what success looks like. And then it goes on to say marketing professionals are using the marketing and advertising skills of the past of traditional media, and they don't realize that content is not advertising. We are creating content because we can and not asking if we should.
That's right.
It's amazing. And I saw a quote from you that said that, I think it was e-consultancy, unused and wasted content costs B2B marketers alone like $50 billion a year.
That's right.
Unbelievable. Yeah. It's just staggering. Can you tell us the story about how the book came to be? You talk about that in the beginning of the book and why you wrote it and the people you had in mind when you all were writing it.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's by far been the biggest question that we hear from, you know, and I hear whenever I talk to marketers when the topic of content marketing comes up. And I always chuckle a little bit because I think, you know, I always think to myself a little bit, you know, and the question comes up and it's usually like crossed arms, legs folded, you know, sort of sitting back, you know, in a sort of aggressive posture. The question.
Oh yeah, yeah. I've been there. I've seen that movie 100 times.
Exactly, and I always chuckle because I think to myself, and I usually try to find a more diplomatic way of saying, but you know, I want to say when the question comes up, well, what's the ROI of your marketing overall? What's the ROI? And I love this quote of, you know, what's the ROI of the logo that you just slapped on a stadium for a couple million bucks? And you know, I don't think I've ever actually asked that question directly to a CMO or some, you know, sort of a naysayer asking that question. But I do think it's important and really interesting that the question comes up. And so I've tried to think, and I'm a little bit of a philosopher. So I instead of getting defensive, I sat back and I thought, why do people ask this question? And I really do think it comes down to a defense mechanism. And, you know, in general, as a species, we're all pretty resistant to change. And, and you know, we've got, you know, over 100 years of momentum in the traditional, you know, sort of marketing approach and, you know, Barnum and Bailey circus and snake oil salesman or whatever.
Yeah, that muscle analogy. Memory goes deep.
That's right. And so, I get it. The other thing that I always try to remind audiences when I speak in public is that, you know, I'm a father, right? And I love to share pictures, you know, great pictures of my cute kids. And, you know, of course, I'm biased, but on Facebook. And so businesses feel the same way that we do as parents, right? We want to just talk and share all of the things that we love about the babies that we create. And that's the way CEOs feel. It's a natural instinctual kind of a thing. And I totally understand that. And so I think what's important is that, you know, unfortunately our business is not as important as raising a child. However, it can have a large impact. And so I think it's important for CEOs especially to understand that there is a way to get your message across that actually attracts people as opposed to, you know, sort of turns them off. And unfortunately we live in an age, you know, a consumer directed, self-educating, you know, sort of a world where we are all in control of the content experiences. You know, we skip TV ads on TV. You know, we sort of ignore banner ads as much as possible. And what's happening?
Well, now we are, but I think that this hasn't caught up with a lot of the marketers or the businesses.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so again, I try to go back, you know, it's a natural instinct of the business to want to talk about itself. There's a long, like you said, a long muscle memory sort of history of marketing equals promotion. And so I think, you know, I think the what is the ROI of content marketing question comes up, not as a real question and a real desire to understand the ROI of content marketing, but as a defense mechanism. And that's why I think it's still important. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, I'm still writing articles. What is content marketing? Why is content marketing important? Why has the world changed? It's the one thing that I lead with in every presentation I give is the world has changed. Most content stinks. That's the e-consultancy stat that you referred to. It's almost criminal how much of the content.
Someone should go to marketing jail.
See, if there was one, I would be the warden. It's just unbelievable to me that CMOs and marketing leaders can sit back and be responsible for organizations that create, you know, basically 50% of what they create is pure waste. It never gets a chance to perform. And the third step, you know, the third sort of key point is that there is a new way, there is a better way that we can reach and engage and convert new customers to our business in a way that we can value. And that's why we wrote this book. We wrote this book, you know, I think Joe even wrote in his very gracious review on Amazon that if you're looking for an all-encompassing book on content marketing, this is not the book for you. I mean, he actually wrote that.
Yeah, read his.
Content marketing. And I wanted to comment and reply on his review and say that's because people should go read your book first. And he, you know, he's just done
That's
such
fair.
A great job in this industry and has been such a great mentor and a friend for me. But you know, this book was specifically to try to address the pushback and the real question that I think serious marketers have about trying to understand how do we value content marketing in a way that the business can understand.
Yeah, you know, one other thing I would like to add for the listener is that if you're in there talking about all the great stuff that content marketing can do, and you're basically, you've just read Joe's book and you're kind of presenting that, and the people, the crossed arm people, and they say, that's nice, that's actually worse. If they're saying, what's the ROI? That's actually a good thing. That means you've engaged them and you're getting some pushback. And as you know, having done sales in your career, you really actually don't know that you're getting anywhere until you start to get some pushback.
It's a great thing. In fact, you know, there are two schools, right? There is the camp of folks that are asking it as a defense mechanism. There are serious marketers that are trying to understand how do they get the budget, how do they build the business case, and how do they actually measure the return on investment that you might make in content marketing. And that's the group of people that we wrote this book for.
Well, and I think that this book or the things that you outline in the book are the things that are really going to get you to the next level with these folks. So you talk about the steps you need to build a strong business case for content marketing. Let's go through, there's just four of them, but I just wanted to touch on those four. The first one you talk about is research. Mm-hmm. How does somebody get started with that?
Yeah, it starts back with that, you know, that stat we were talking about. One is, what's the ROI of your marketing overall? And so many marketing leaders can't actually answer that question. And so it's really important, I think, to start with the baseline of saying, hey, if you're going to measure or judge the value of content marketing, you need to, it's a relevant sort of a figure, right? You need to have the perspective of what's the ROI of your marketing effort overall? And then how can we measure and look at the things that work versus the things that don't? And so when it comes to research, the very first thing that I ask and have helped now companies to look at is really, you know, at the highest level, just take your total investment in marketing. And if you can't even specifically measure the revenue that you're driving, try to estimate in an intelligent and, you know, educated way the actual revenue that marketing is generating, and then at least on the back of a napkin you can get to an average ROI. And so, you know, it's really difficult, you know, especially in complex organizations, it's really difficult for a lot of marketers to have that kind of visibility. But it's so important because that's the first step. You have to understand what's the baseline, and then you start to look at, you know, how can you start focusing on modern marketing techniques that really attract customers instead of, you know, having to pay for each additional incremental lead or customer. So step one in the research is really getting that piece of information. The other thing as I mentioned, gets back to the research on content waste. And there's just such a massive investment in content in every organization. I know Joe's research says 90% of folks are using content marketing. I sometimes wonder if they confuse, if the respondents confuse that question with, are you creating content?
Have you written a few sentences on your website? Yeah. That's a good point, though, because one of the most interesting things in the book I found was you talk about calculating the cost of unused content.
That's right.
Talk a little bit about that. I found that very interesting.
So one of the things that we found, and I saw this at SAP, and it was probably the most motivating piece of research I've ever done. And I spent 10 years in market research, so that's saying a lot.
Yeah, and it jumped off the jumped out of the book at me, so it's still working.
And you know, it started with an audit that we did, and it was not of everything that we created as an organization. We took one product portfolio and we looked at all the folks that we knew had been given money to create stuff. And then we looked at all the stuff they created and tried to understand, well, where did it end up going? What was the destination or objective for that piece of content, and how did it perform? And we actually got stuck in this process of this sort of amazing stat that 56% of all the content that was budgeted for, created, and then sort of uploaded somewhere, like a digital asset management system, for example.
But not published on a website
never got the chance to perform. And so it was pure 100% wasted effort. And so when you apply that statistic across an organization as large as SAP or any real company, you're going to find that that's a lot of dollars, and it's a lot of people and a lot of agencies that are invested in creating stuff that never sees the light of day. And, you know, my most tweetable tweet is, behind every piece of bad content is an executive who asked for it. And, you know, so the question is,
ouch,
why do we create all this stuff? And the answer is because people ask for it. And we don't, as marketers, I always push back and I say, don't point the finger at the CEO or the CMO or the sales guy that asked for something. We are accountable for pushing back and asking before we go and create a piece of content, is this something that our customers actually want, will read, will share, will engage with, and that might drive value for our brand?
Yeah, it almost makes me, like, if I were there, it would make me want to say something like, geez, you know what's keeping me up at night? Worrying that stuff I do is going to fall into that 56%.
Yeah.
Talk to me about how this is, in other words, just say, help me with my fears here, a content requester.
Yeah.
So one of the other steps you talk about is aligning program goals with company objectives. And this one is a real challenge. I find this a lot with organizations I wonder if it's because they don't realize they can link it.
Well, it's back to this sort of marketing has a marketing problem. Right. You know, it part of marketing supports the business, right? Marketing is not, I always think of like Bannermen if you're a Game of Thrones fan. You know, it's not about, you know, sort of hoisting a banner with your logo on it and calling it the end of the day. Marketing exists to support and serve the business, and it exists to be an advocate for customers. And I think when you put it in those terms, you start to see that marketing drives tremendous value for organizations. And it's not just like, hey, our logo is pretty value. It's literally dollar value. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, one of the skills that I think is really important in this digital age is marketers need to really understand how to present marketing programs in the context of something that's important to the company. Mm-hmm. And you know, in the book, I lean on a lot of the experiences I had at SAP, you know, and what we were trying to do at SAP, and it was, we were lucky enough to have, and they still have, this visionary CEO, Bill McDermott, who saw light bulbs go off in over the heads of something like 20,000 people in Orlando when he presented not on the products and the new solutions and technologies that SAP was developing, but when he was talking about how customers were using technology to drive innovation. It was a thought leadership and a customer value focused message. And so he quickly turned to the CMO and he said, this is what marketing needs to do. It needs to tell these stories of technology driving innovation. And ultimately, that business goal is what drove our content marketing efforts. And we were just so fortunate that he essentially laid out our content marketing mission statement before I even got started.
Yes, but you had that CEO buy-in, but you still had pushback from the organization. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, it's interesting. I had the CEO and CMO's mandate, and the SVP that I reported into. She was the head of brand and advertising, and you know, it was like a good 90% of the rest of the organization in marketing was resistant. And you know what happens? I mean, we all know this. We're sitting in college and we graduate and we're like, where are we going to get a job? And we finally land somewhere that we're proud to work at. Mm-hmm. You know, a company that we're proud to work for. And you know, we start to you know, fear the loss of that job.
Right, right.
And so what ends up happening is we do things because our boss asks us to and not because they're the right thing, because that's the safe thing to do. And you know, I think that's true in every organization. It's not a criticism of any one organization.
Yeah.
We've all done it. I've done it for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we found was there was this pushback from our marketing teams who essentially, and I think I used this quote in the book, I heard it probably three times a day. How is this going to help us sell more software? And, you know, and what they meant was, if we're not talking about the stuff we sell, how are we going to sell?
Yeah.
And it's kind of, you know, and you have to use, you know, whatever analogy works, like, hey, I don't walk into a bar and walk up to a pretty girl and say, hey, do you want to marry me? You know, whatever analogy, I mean, that's an overused one, but whatever.
Well, but I can tell you it didn't work. I tried it for years.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, and the thing is, I wrote a post about this the other day. You know, the way that we attract people to us is we have to pretend and actually fake caring about them. You know, because
or at least start that way. Yeah.
Well, and the point is, you know, before you get to know somebody, you don't really know enough to care. But I think when you lean in with that empathy, when you lean in with that desire to connect, that's how you attract people to you. And that's how you then get to, you know, you begin to sort of peel back the layers of the onion. You start to know who people really are and what they care about, what concerns they have, and how you can help them, mm-hmm. and how you can form a relationship. And so that's what good marketing is. And so, you know, I had to spend like 6 months going through that education process with the folks that had the, you know, their sort of their finger on the rope. You know, they were able to pull the lever and stop the process. And I had to, you know, sort of take them a step back and say, listen, this is important. Important to the company. It's a CEO objective to provide thought leadership and focus on customer value. And that needs to be reflected in the marketing that we do. And so that's why we went and did the audit. I mean, we did the audit because I needed information. I needed ammunition to show the marketing organization that you know, we do some great stuff. And we're, you know, SAP still is a best practice marketing machine in many ways, but there's so much opportunity to improve. And so I needed to kind of, you know, I wasn't the most popular person in marketing for a long time because I was I was shining a light on some of these things that every organization has, all the inefficiencies and you know, lack of actual productive kinds of marketing programs. And so, you know, it was eye-opening for sure to present some of those.
Wow. And you made it through. I mean, it seems to me like knowing that you had the CEO's blessing on this might have helped, but I have a feeling there are listeners out there who maybe still haven't quite gotten to the CEO and they're thinking, I got to go somewhere else or I'm just not going to make it. Were there days where you thought, I don't know if I'm going to be able to move this mountain?
You know what? There were a couple of moments and that really sort of pushed the ball across the finish line. One was, I remember there were about 200 people in our cloud organization, mostly on the sales side and some of them on the product side, and those are the folks you got to get. And so the light bulb moment was, you know, I sort of pulled up. Salesforce was a big competitor and has been, you know, long dominant in this, you know, sort of cloud computing, no software kind of space. And I said to the, you know, I was getting pushback, and I said to the head of sales for our new cloud division, imagine that you're one of our customers and prospects, and what do you think that they do when they're trying to understand how to utilize the cloud in their organization? And you know, the answer was pretty clear. I'm like, they go to Google. So I heard them all typing in their browser.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm like, okay, so type cloud computing into your browser and tell me what comes up. And of course it was Salesforce and IBM and Oracle and not SAP. And I was like, now imagine that SAP is the number one answer. What is cloud computing? Why is cloud computing important? How can cloud computing solutions drive value for a business? Imagine we have the number one answer on every one of those queries. That's what we're talking about. And it was like, it was almost like I felt all, you know, 200 of these people on the call line up behind me.
And, yes, and you know, that's
it's
great.
Just something that really, I think, visually helps, especially salespeople and product people to understand that you've got to begin to be the answer to the questions that your customers are asking, and then ultimately lead them down the path to that your product is a solution at some point. And so, but when you lead with product, you tune people out right away.
Yep. And I think, you know, you could probably say now, do you notice that Salesforce isn't talking about Salesforce? They're answering the question,
right,
which was the first step. And what you've described, I've experienced it when leading content marketing workshops. And I must say, it is one of the most satisfying things I experience these days is when suddenly you have helped people get that light bulb to appear above their head.
Yeah.
That's that for me is when I feel like I'm really, that's when I get the most excited, other than when I'm interviewing authors like you.
Thanks.
One other thing I wanted to ask you about that I thought was really helpful was you talk about borrowing budget.
Yeah.
Well, let me go back. The other two were set appropriate goals.
Yeah.
And ask for a realistic budget.
Mm-hmm.
Now, related to budget, you recommend borrowing budget from underperforming digital assets. Very interesting. Can you explain how to do that?
It's probably the easiest lever, and we call these. There's basically 10 formulas in this book that just about anybody can use. I call them levers because every company is probably going to have 3 or 4 that they can really lean on and pull. The one I think that is probably one of the strongest is this underperforming asset or underperforming digital sort of campaign or program opportunity. And so one of the and the story that I tell in the book, I don't know if you saw the case study, but basically I had partnered up with our head of advertising, and you know, in many cases you might think advertising is sort of the anathema of content marketing, but I was really lucky to have the support from the advertising team. And so, you know, I had no budget, right? And I'm talking to the head of advertising about the program that she's running and, you know, the relatively large media dollars that she had, which I did not want to borrow, right? She would have given them to me if I'd asked. And I didn't want to hit her media budget because that was given to her by the leadership team to promote the brand and the good things that we were doing. So then we started talking and I said, well, what about your landing pages? You know, who's building those? How do they perform?
Mm-hmm.
And what did they cost? And, you know, the interesting data that came back was, you know, 99% bounce rate on those landing pages.
That's not good for just in case the listener.
Well, and it's not good, but it's common, and it's totally
typical
for an advertising landing page and just about any landing page that's somewhat campaign driven. So 99% bounce rate, zero organic traffic to those pages, no social shares whatsoever. I mean, literally zero organic traffic and social shares. And the budget to create those pages was you know, six figures, you know, 200,000 plus. And, you know, the interesting thing is that a lot of companies, especially the large ones, go through the same process. They're told to come up with a campaign. They go and create campaign landing pages. And the next year, they throw it all away and they start over.
I'm laughing to keep from crying.
Well, it's, you know, and these things happen because they've happened that way and they make sense and they made sense at some point, but they just don't fit today's model, today's world.
Mm-hmm.
So my proposal to her was pretty simple. Give me half your money. Give me half the budget that you use on campaign landing pages. I'll build a content marketing experience that's going to be customer driven. And you can use that digital property as the landing destination for advertising. Now, what I can promise you is not just saving you half the money that you would normally spend, but I'm also going to give you organic traffic to the advertising pages. I'm going to give you social share opportunities that's going to happen and an 80%, you know, something like an 80% bounce rate instead of 99.
Uh-huh.
And it was, you know, it wasn't even a discussion. I mean, it was a done deal before I even started.
Wow, that's great.
And the cool thing about content marketing ROI, the moment she transferred that money to me, right? So she gave me, and again, I'm going to use some round numbers just to kind of make it up a little bit. Assuming she spent 200 grand to create those pages and had a budget for 200,000, she gave me half that money. And the moment she did, we had a return on investment. We were able to give back 100 grand to the company before we even got started doing content marketing. So these opportunities exist all over organizations. If you think about search landing pages, campaign landing pages, look at all the digital real estate that exists inside corporate websites, and you'll begin to quickly see that there's a lot of money spent on digital assets that don't perform. And so, you know, the easiest lever I think to pull is to look, find those opportunities to save the company some money, take a portion of it, and go build an amazing customer experience.
Yeah, that's great. Michael, let's transition though. I have one beef with your book.
Sure.
Okay, we got to have some controversy here.
Let's do it.
At the beginning, now let me back up and say I was an English major in college, and I think you were too, right?
I was, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so I still had to take a year of calculus. Okay, so I did have some math, but at the beginning of the book, you say, you know, there was a warning. Yeah. There will be math.
Yeah.
And I think that was too much of a warning. You've got a bunch of formulas. You've got some math in here, but it is not. We're not talking calculus. we're talking about, you know, addition, subtraction, division, and maybe multiplication. I think that the tricky part, because I think people have an unnatural phobia of math, is maybe they just don't quite know where to get those numbers from to start with. So. Don't change the book, obviously, but it was like, wait a minute, this is not hard math. And frankly, if you're in marketing and you can't do those four essential parts of arithmetic, you're going to have a problem anyway. I've heard other people say marketing has gone from Mad Men to Math Men.
Yeah.
But we're not talking calculus, but in the book, we don't have time to go through all the math, and it doesn't really suit itself well to a podcast, but you go into great detail, and I just wanted to list a couple of these for the listener. And you talk about the value, and we're talking dollar sign value, how to go into your organization and calculate, and we're not talking quadratic equations here, how to find things like the value of unbranded organic search traffic, or the value of repeat visitors, the value of social likes, the value of your subscriptions. You mentioned bounce rate. You have the value of a bounce rate. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the sort of thing where if you are a marketer and you're going in and you're talking about the value of the cost per lead. First off, any marketing person needs to know these things now. Mm-hmm. But also, it seems like if you are a marketer who's going in there and is conversant in these things and has this data, you're going to have a long, fruitful career in marketing. You're probably going to get promoted because that is the kind of thing the boss man is more interested in hearing about. In fact, don't even talk about marketing so much. Talk about these numbers. I mean, that's my sense. Have you seen that?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, part of that was tongue in cheek. It's funny. I mean, as an English major, you know, and I did, you know, and I do have a dream of someday writing the great American novel. But, you know, after we wrote the sort of early drafts of this manuscript, we looked back and we said, you know, this is not the great American novel we ever envisioned ourselves putting out there. And it's not even really a call to arms for businesses, you know, and because, you know, Joe wrote that book with Epic Content Marketing, and mm-hmm. Anne Hanley wrote Content Rules. And, you know, I think enough folks, you know, Jay Baer with Utility, enough folks have written the call to arms. Mm-hmm. This was a practical guide to answering this big question that we kept hearing of how do we calculate the value of content marketing. And so, yeah, it was a little tongue in cheek and partly a little self-deprecating to say, hey, you know, this is not the great, I think we wrote in there, like, this isn't a tale of love lost and betrayal.
Yeah. And it's not a bunch of unicorns and rainbows.
Yes. it's hard work. And, you know, but like you said, it's really not that difficult. We were trying to provide, you know, really practical steps to going from, I don't know how to calculate the value of content marketing, I don't know how to get the budget, I don't know how to build the business case, and provide 10 very simple steps and calculations that any business can use to justify their investment.
Yeah. And you mentioned the 10 steps. At the very end, there's an action plan in 10 steps with 10 calculations to get you started to identify your own content formula. And my sense is, based on my experience, the formulas are there. You've just got to go get that information if you don't have access to it.
That's right.
And I think great things will happen. And I would hope that people would be, you know, inspired to say, look, I can do this. This isn't so, it doesn't have to be so scary. And it just reminds me of folks who say, well, I'm not really technologically oriented. It's like, well, I just think maybe they have the aptitude. They just haven't been exposed to what they need to do.
Yeah.
So if readers took only one thing away from the book, what would you hope it would be?
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing I'd love for anyone to get out of this book is that it's not hard and it's not expensive, that the value and the opportunity are too great to pass up. And that's why I've sort of like repositioned my whole career on this content marketing trend that I think is going to continue until we no longer call it content marketing, because that's all marketing will be mm-hmm. at some point. And so, you know, the one key message I want to get across in this book is that it's not hard and it's not expensive. Every business should be doing it. Marcus Sheridan loves to say that every business has an opportunity to be the best teacher on something to their market, to their customers. And you know, I think that sort of, you know, sort of vision is absolutely apropos for the book. And so it's not hard. It's not expensive. Everyone can do it. We provide the tips and the calculations and the formulas here, but you know, every business has a formula that they can identify for how to build content marketing ROI.
Yeah. Your comment about content marketing, they won't call it content marketing in the future, reminds me of the Seth Godin quote about content marketing is really the only marketing that's left.
That's right.
Are there any recent marketing or business books that you would recommend?
You know, there's one. I'm going to give you three. I'm going to break your rule. I'm going to give you three, but there's one that I read twice.
Well, my podcast, my rules, I'm free to break them. So
there you go. So I read Content Inc. recently.
Yeah.
By Joe Polizzi. Uh-huh. What I love about Content Inc. is it really tells, you know, in the same way that we provide the calculations and formula for content marketing ROI, Joe provides in Content Inc. essentially the roadmap for any business to build a content brand that can drive value. And so I loved what he did with that book. He took Epic Content Marketing one layer deeper and essentially highlighted companies that have built their entire brand based on building a content brand or being a content-driven business.
Yeah, and he's been on the show and we talked about that book. And I remember, because I'd read Epic Content Marketing, and then the other one came out and I thought, And I was struck by how different it was from Epic. I mean, it was just completely different, and it's backed up with real life data and examples. Fantastic book.
Yeah,
I think it's going to be one of the biggest ones in the next year or so.
I agree. And you know, when I told Joe that I was going to go off and start my own agency and try to build a business around content marketing, you know, and I asked him what's your advice, you know, best piece of advice, and he said go read Content Inc. And so I did. The second book I want to mention, and it's like I said, I read one book twice, and it's this one. So Andrew Davis wrote Town Inc. which maybe maybe not on the radar for all of your listeners, because it's not really a marketing book.
Well, he's going to be on the show.
Oh, perfect.
His interview is coming up.
See, I'm giving you a softball, and now you just
man.
Park.
It's, for the listeners' benefit, we did not discuss this before.
No, we didn't.
And great book, and I already bought a copy and gave it to a client.
Yeah, it's I've done the same, actually. I was doing a workshop with somebody who leads economic development for a small town in Texas, believe it or not. And I said, you know what, you need to go buy Town Inc. And I literally went on Amazon and bought it for her on the spot. And the thing is it doesn't sound like a marketing book, but it is. It's a marketing book. You know, Andrew's approach is you know, very altruistic, and he's trying to help small town America reinvigorate itself. But it really is a marketing book, and I think the principles he provides can you know really sort of resonate for just about anybody in any business challenge that you're facing. I read it twice because he's so actionable. I love the way Andrew writes. Every chapter ends with got me all riled up, and I was ready to just, you know, sort of take on some of the principles that he was presenting, because he just does such a great job of making it so actionable and defending, you know, all of the things that I think he's putting forth in that book. So that would be the other one that I'd love.
And I think that book is going to sell really well. And the reason why I stumbled upon this is that I gave the book to an economic development client of mine. Mm-hmm. Okay, now he's going to read it and go, yes! He's then going to go buy like 25 more copies, because he's going to give it to his advisory board and a copy to every city councilman. And then they're going to start buying it for like everybody who's a member of the chamber. And it's fantastic. And he's just such an innovative marketing thinker. His other book, Brandscaping, was just so creative.
Yeah, I think that Andrew Davis is probably one of the brightest minds in marketing today. He asked if we could have a meeting, and I told him I'd walk to Boston to meet with Andrew.
Yeah. And Jay Baer, who you mentioned earlier in the beginning of the book, he said if if Malcolm Gladwell had a better head for business, he would be Andrew Davis.
That's right. I agree.
Wow. What's the third book?
So Anne Hanley's Everybody Writes, and it's a totally different. It's funny. Anne sent me a signed copy of the book because she's such a sweetheart, and I'm actually a facilitator for her Content Rules workshop, and absolutely love, you know, Anne and everything that she's done for our industry, and so she sent me Everybody Writes, and what's really funny is I have a 9-year-old daughter, because I mentioned on the back, you know, I have a quote on the back jacket, and so my daughter, you know, she's like, I'm going to read this book. She read it in 2 nights.
Wow.
And after reading it, said, you know what, I'm going to write a book. And I was just like, you know what, if Anne can write a book that resonates with my 9-year-old who, you know, doesn't spend 3 hours doing anything in a focused way, you know, I think she takes, she sort of peels back the layers that, you know, of, you know, sort of terms and buzzwords. And she just gets right down to the core of how do you break through the noise? And she uses this term of being bigger, braver, and bolder. And I absolutely love her message of how do you really gain attention in this crazy world that we live in of attention deficit and attention starvation, and really lays it out for any individual, business, you know, consultant, whatever you may be. I think she does a great job of laying it out in that book.
Fantastic book. It is inspiring. I'm amazed to hear about the effect it had on your daughter. It was also, I mean, she is, this is an overused term, but she's really smart. Mm-hmm. And she's just as nice as she is smart. But her book, it seemed like one of the most difficult books to write, a book about writing.
Yeah.
But after reading it, as I write, as all marketers have to, it was like Anne was then forever sitting next to me saying, okay, remember what I told you? Or, yes, you can do this. It was just sort of like she somehow got into my subconscious. The other thing about her book that maybe it only affected some of us, I was laughing out loud when I was reading it. She's very, very funny. And it got to the point where I was reading it and my wife, you know, sitting there in the living room, my wife was like, what are you reading? Because we don't normally laugh out loud while we're reading. So
yes.
Those are great. Those are great. Are there any books you look forward to getting into?
Yeah. So, and I know you and I have talked about the Challenger sales model from Corporate Executive Board and, you know, loving what they're doing. And they've got Challenger Customer coming out, I think, this Friday. And I just can't wait to get my hands on it. The Challenger sales, you know, I think what I loved about that book was it really sort of breaks through it kind of identifies why great salespeople are counterintuitive. They're not, you know, there's this sort of convention of thinking that great salespeople are either pushy or they're like, you know, touchy-feely focused on relationships. And what that book really showed was that, no, it's the ones that are challenging their customers to think differently and to think about how they can outmaneuver and outcompete in a tough marketplace. And I just, knowing what they did for me in that book, I can't wait to see what they're going to do with Challenger Customer.
Yeah, you're going to love it. And they'll, when this episode publishes, they will have been, their episode will have been out. And as I mentioned to you, that book kind of blew my mind. I mean, like more than the 50 I'd read before. And it had me really rethinking everything. And the thing about it was, it reminded me a little bit of Good to Great, where, you know, I'm thinking, well, how do they know? But they back it all up with data.
Yeah.
And so it just, oh boy, I had it on the Kindle, I even bought a hard copy for my desk. So
Wow. Great.
it's fantastic. So how can listeners best find out more about you and your book?
Yeah. So, I mean, a couple of ways. I mean, the easiest way to, I think, get in touch with me in general is just on Twitter at Brenner Michael. I try to respond to anyone that ever reaches out to me there.
That's true.
My website, as you know, is marketinginsidergroup.com. So would love anybody to come and subscribe to the content we try to put out there. Helpful, useful tips for marketers struggling in today's world. Certainly catch me on LinkedIn. You can find the book, The Content Formula, on Amazon, or go to www.thecontentformula.com.
Yeah, and the publications I mentioned at the intro, you actually, I've seen you on some other places too. So you're everywhere, Michael Brenner. One final quote from the book. We wrote this book because the topic is important. Our goal is to help you develop your own content formula, and in the process, become a marketing rock star for your business, your customers, and your career. The name of the book is The Content Formula, calculate the ROI of content marketing, and never waste money again. The authors are Michael Brenner and Les Bedor. Michael, thank you very much for being on the Marketing Book Podcast.
Thanks, I appreciate it. This has been fun.
And that closes the book on the 53rd episode of the Marketing Book Podcast. But please don't let the end of this episode be the end of your learning. Visit marketingbookpodcast.com for show notes, free resources, and guides. And while there, be sure to join the Marketing Book Podcast newsletter so you never miss an episode. And please join us next time as we talk to Brian Solis about his spectacular new book, X, The Experience When Business Meets Design, How to Design a Meaningful Customer Experience in Every Moment of Truth. Thanks again for listening to the Marketing Book Podcast.
You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcast-free today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast-free.